Good afternoon and welcome to our Elder Council Member Benefit Webinar, Same Gender Planning in Elder Docs. My name is Linda St. John and I'm the Education Coordinator here at Elder Council. Before I introduce our presenter, I'm going to just review a couple of quick items. Your lines are muted. That's because we're recording this session, so we want to get as clean of a recording as possible, but we do encourage questions. So throughout the presentation, as you have questions, please type them into the questions box in the GoToWebinar control panel that's located on the right-hand side of your screen. If any of you experience any audio problems or anything else like that, please use the chat function to send me a message in that same control panel, or you can email education@eldercouncil.com. That'll come to me as well. And lastly, at the end of the webinar, after your screen closes, a short survey will come up, and we just ask you to take just a minute or so to complete that because we really value your feedback, and we want to know what other webinars you'd like to see us holding in the future. So with that, I'd like to introduce today's presenter. He is Brian Albee, our Director of Technology. For those of you listening that haven't worked with Brian yet, I'm just going to tell you just a little bit about him. He practiced law in California for over 7 years before joining Wealth Council, our sister company, back in 2004, eventually serving as their Director of Software and Technology. In 2008, we were fortunate to have Brian come join us at Elder Council in order to develop Elder Docs. And he's been highly involved in developing the Elder Council Veterans Asset Protection Trust, among many other documents and key functions. He brings a significant amount of legal knowledge and technical aptitude that allows him and his team to continually improve and advance our document drafting tools. He lives in Wisconsin, where he enjoys spending time with his wife and 4 children. So thank you, Brian, for being here today.
Oh, you bet. Thanks for that nice introduction. All right, well, first thing I want to do before we start is give credit to Cynthia Barrett, who has been instrumental in helping us with this particular update and release to our documents for planning purposes for same-gender couples or same-sex couples, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Cynthia has been practicing in Oregon since about 1976, if I got my facts right, and she's a past president of NALA. Been very active in this community, so we're very happy to have her on board with helping. So I just wanted to publicly recognize Cynthia Barrett for that effort. So if you know Cynthia, thank her. All right, so now with that, I want to start the webinar by, talking about sex. Okay, now that I've got your attention. This webinar is called Same Gender Planning. And as we went through this, we being me and the folks at Elder Council, as we went through this process and learning experience of doing same-sex planning, we looked at phrases and terms and saw, okay, well, sex, you know, means other things. You know, you say if you want to talk about sex, people go, oh, and they get a little twitchy about the word. So we chose, as we were going through this, same gender, talking about same gender planning. And so the webinar was scheduled and called Same Gender Planning. And then Cynthia was kind enough and gentle enough to educate me. And what really is important to understand in the community, and we do have a dialogue on this in the system, is that the gay community or the LGBTQ community really looks at sex as the biological condition of being male or female. So if you've got two male clients in front of you, they are of the same sex. However, they may identify differently with one gender or the other. So one of them might identify with being female while the other identifies with being male. And that we hear the phrase gender identity, not sex identity. And so the word gender takes on a slightly different meaning. So if you've got clients in front of you who are of the same sex, but one identifies with being male and the other one identifies with being female, if you refer to them as being of the same gender, you might be insulting them. So we took that, we wrote a little piece on it in the software, and we then changed our language from same gender within the system to same sex. And that was just, you know, very recently we made that change before we put the update out. And the update out went out this morning, for those of you that aren't aware. So this is same-sex planning. All right. I'm just going to dive into the interview. You should be seeing hot docs and elder docs on my screen. So what I'm going to do is start from a fresh answer file. I don't have something that's pre-populated so that you can see where we've made some changes in the area of entering names, for instance. So this is a new answer file, and I am going to start by creating a revocable living trust and companion will set of documents. My client is Joan Doe. So Joan Doe's RL, Joan Doe RLT docs. So that's my document set I'm creating. And I'm just going to click go to the document interview. Now as we go in this and I see other things that I've changed that I want you to know about, I'm going to point them out like right now. We've added some navigational features so that from the interview screen you can switch document sets, you can return to the launch pad, and you can switch documents within the document set. So you don't have to go back to the launch pad first, click a different document, then get back into the interview. It's just an easier way of navigating. The one that selects the document also appears right below the main dialog button for that particular document. All right, so let's go in and add some names. I don't have any names in here yet, so we're going to add a couple of names. We'll add actually two couples here because what we've done in this particular release is not only handled planning for same-sex married couples, but also planning for anybody who is a life partner, or has a life partner, and is contemplating marriage. Now that could be someone who's same sex, or they could be opposite sex couples. You know, someone got engaged, but they're not planning to get married for a couple of years, but they want to get some planning in place. So that's something that we've done. It's in contemplation of marriage planning, and that gets pretty complicated. Also, I want to point out that in this webinar, I'm not going to get into the legal technical details. I'm going to review some of the options available in the software. It's really just more in the way of overview so that you can see some of the things we've changed, but you will see definitely some language changes in the documents when you get to creating them. All right, so we're going to add Joan Doe, and Joan is going to be married. And I'm going to edit the marital status and children. And we're going to add another name. We're going to add Joan's spouse, who is married. And Joan is married to Jane Smith. And I'll close that. And I'll select that name record as Joan's spouse. Now, one thing you will notice immediately is that before this particular update, a name could only be married to another name of the opposite sex. So we've got Jane Smith would not have appeared in this drop-down for Joan Doe, who is female. Since you selected a spouse who is of the same sex, now we need to know, how do you refer to that spouse? Is Joan referring to Jane as her husband, as her wife, or as her spouse, or something else? So let's use that whole gender identity concept, and let's say Jane identifies more with being male, and Joan calls Jane her husband. So Jane Smith is, we're going to say, is husband. You can, by the way, you can pick one of those three options, or you can type whatever you want into this field. You can select or type there. And let's not worry about children, so we're going to say that Joan and Jane have no children. All right, so that is going to be Joan and Jane's name record, joint name record. And the other thing I'm going to do is now I'm going to add another name, and this is going to be John Doe, so he's male, Marital status is single or life partner. So we're going to say life partner. And this is John Doe. And we'll go ahead and again edit marital status and children. And here we're going to say, and you'll see another option, that since John Doe is a life partner, we can select whether or not he is contemplating marriage. I'm not going to answer this now so that we can see something in the interview when we get there, and then we'll come back to this. But we can say he's contemplating marriage, and we can or say that we're adding life partner information. And if you're contemplating marriage, you're adding life partner information. All right, so I'm going to get out of that for a moment, and we're going to go back now to the interview. But that's some of the changes we've made in names, where you can now select a same-sex spouse, and you can then identify the nomenclature that's used for how you refer to that spouse. All right, so in Joan Doe's RLT documents that we're creating, we're going to go into the trust, and go into initial design information and trust information. And now the system doesn't know that anything about that this is for Joan yet. It just knows we're creating a trust for someone. I'm going to select joint trust. And you're going to see something that will come up here in just a moment. But I'm going to select joint trust, and then I'm going to, well, let me say it's a new RLT. And then I'm going to select Joan and Jane as the grantors. We're going to see a message that will come up that basically says for joint trust for same-sex spouses, we don't quite recommend that yet. And there's a reason for that. Essentially, the United States Supreme Court has yet to rule on this, and there could be a ruling that makes it unfavorable to have a joint trust. So we get this caution. If the U.S. Supreme Court rules against forced recognition of same-sex marriages validly entered into a recognition state, then in a non-recognition state, a joint trust could create problems relating to gifting and property rights, etc. So we're not yet recommending joint trusts for same-sex spouses. So let's go and make an individual trust then. Let's take a look at that. So this is going to be an individual trust. We will select Joan as the grantor. And now we're going to see something that will come up here. We're going to say refer to the grantor as, and I'll just select grantor. Rest of the screen we don't need to go over. There's nothing new that happens here. But you will notice in our interview outline we now have a dialogue for same-sex spouse information. And here when we go to that dialogue, we get a note that talks about some of the essentially special considerations that you should take into account or consider taking into account for same-sex spouses. And then this is where we have our little dialogue that talks about the difference between same-sex and same-gender, just as a reminder to you about that distinction and how in advising clients you should be sensitive to the nomenclature that's used and how those clients might identify themselves as being male or female. All right, so on this screen, we can now include these same-sex considerations, or we can say, no, don't. So if we say we want to include same-sex considerations, we're going to add language that talks about the state in which they're married. So let's say that these people are married in California. And then you can determine or specify that there are other states in which they are married, because a lot of same-sex couples will end up being married in more than one state. Now, of course, we list all the states here, and not all states allow same-sex marriages. But we're just identifying what state they are married in. So we'll say that they're also married in Oregon. And then the question about whether or not they are registered domestic partners, and if you answer yes, again, it comes up, all right, in what states are they registered domestic partners? And I'm going to say, well, they registered as domestic partners in California before they got married, so they're registered there. And then this last one is a revocation by marriage statute question. Let's pull up the help screen there. What this talks about is a clause comes in that says, my life partner and I, or some such language. Oops, where'd my help screen go? Looks like I made the software get a little twitchy on me. All right. This comes in, by the way, the language that you're seeing here is designed for people who are contemplating marriage. The same language comes in, just a little bit different, for those people who are married. So it would say, if my husband and I later enter into a marriage, civil union, or other state-sanctioned domestic partnership in any state, I declare my intention that my will and any trust that I have executed are not to be revoked by that circumstance, and then you can identify the statute that would otherwise cause a problem. Oregon happens to have a statute that does cause a problem if you enter into a marriage. Now, what's that about? Think about someone who's single, your traditional estate planning client, single, unmarried, you created a trust for them. If that person then later marries, that statute in Oregon would cause an alteration essentially to their estate plan that they had created. We see this much more common on the flip side, where if you have married couples who divorce, that alters the estate plan that you had created if you didn't change it before you died. But there is also, like Oregon, some states that have a revocation by marriage statute, essentially. Okay, so those are some of the same gender consideration provisions that come in for same, I said, see, I slipped into it, same gender, for same-sex married couples. All right, so now what about a person who is a life partner contemplating marriage? What are we going to get different in the interview or in the document with that? Now, that one gets quite a bit more complicated in the execution of this, because we've got to create essentially marital deduction planning that's contingent on being married at the date of death, and if you're not, then some essentially backup planning that should happen. So we've got more information on that one. I'm going to go back into the main screen, where I can select a different document set, and I'm going to tell it to create a new set of documents, and we're going to do John Doe's living trust and companion will. And here, we're just going to give it a name so that we can identify it later. So maybe John and Jane are brother and sister, who knows? So I'll go to the document interview. And because I said John Doe was a life partner, we're going to see, I think I might not have clicked, sometimes I've don't know when I've clicked. Because John Doe is designated as a life partner, we're going to see something in the revocable living trust interview that will give us a little bit of a hint on what we should do here or what we might want to consider. So in trust information, we're going to again say this is an individual trust. We'll say that the trust type is a new trust, and we'll say that the grantor is John Doe. So now that I've selected John Doe as the grantor, the system recognizes that John Doe's marital status is life partner. And then it tells me if I want to acknowledge the life partner or add domestic partner provisions, I want to edit his name record and add the life partner information. Also, if he is in a committed relationship and contemplating marriage, you can design the plan to account for a future marriage. Now, you don't want to use these provisions lightly. You don't want to use them for someone who says, yeah, we think we might get married someday. Well, no. If you think you might get married someday, just do individual plans, not contemplating marriage. This is for the people that say, yeah, we're going to get married just as soon as our state approves same-sex marriages, or as soon as the U.S. Supreme Court rules on it, or we're planning to go to California and get married next summer. So you want the people that are absolutely looking at contemplating marriage. So that gives you some information on what you can do. To do so, edit John Doe's name record and indicate that he's contemplating marriage, then identify the life partner. Okay, so let's go and do that. We'll go back into Work with Names, and I'll edit John Doe's name record. And so now I'll go into the screen for marital status and children, and I will say that John Doe is contemplating marriage. And it's going to then ask me, who is the life partner? Well, I don't have his life partner in here yet, but I'm going to add a name just on the fly, and we're going to have his life partner is James Smith. And once I've selected James, I can refer to that life partner as a life partner, domestic partner, or something else, maybe just partner, although I'd be a little careful about just partner because that can have other meanings in different contexts. So I'll just say I'm going to refer to the life partner as domestic partner. And no, John Doe has no children. Again, I don't want to get into children. There's nothing that really – there's some things that happen. We're going to see something that in the interview in just a minute. It's another change in here. I wanted to do it in this one. I could have done it in the other one, but we'll do it for John. Okay, so now that I've selected that we want to do a contemplation of marriage, we now get our interview outline, a domestic partner information dialogue. And here it says that John's life partner is James Smith. The assembled document will use the phrase domestic partner, and that's because that's what we selected. Edit John's name record to change. So I want to do contemplation of marriage provisions. I'm going to say yes. And now what happens is it says that the interview will treat the grantor as if married. So you'll see numerous references to spouse in the interview. And that's okay. You just assume that John Doe is going to be getting married and we're answering questions for what he'd like to have done if he's married and as it relates to the spouse. And then some of the resulting provisions in the document will be dependent on the grantor being married at the date of death, such as the marital deduction provisions. This next question is something that used to come into the document automatically for life partners who were providing or recognizing their life partner. It's the revocation by notification. That's the provision that says that if I notify my trustee that that James Smith is no longer my life partner, then my trustee isn't supposed to do anything for James Smith. We made that optional, and we back-ended it because, again, it's one of those things that can be offensive to someone when they're looking at their documents and seeing it in the family information article, for instance. So I'm going to say no. I don't even want the provision. We're contemplating marriage. I don't want to say that we're going to take it out. If I end up not getting married or we break up, I'll redo my plan. Are they registered domestic partners? Again, if I say yes here, I can select the state in which they're registered, and we'll get a provision about this in the family information article. How about a revocation by marriage statute? Again, that same thing. If I do say yes to that question, it'll ask me what statute has that revocation by marriage citation, and this was something that just was put in earlier, and I left it there. It might actually come in automatically for a couple of states. All right, so I'll say no for the revocation by marriage statute. And now on children information, I said there was something different here. We used to say, if you have no children, then you have no children. And family information article would just say, I have no children. But now we can say that our children, we either have no definition of children, so we wouldn't be defining the term if there aren't none. Or we can say, yeah, you know, I might have children. I could have afterborn children or adopted children. Or I could have afterborn children, adopted children, and art children. Okay, art is a term of art, assisted reproductive technology. So if you are going to add art children to your documents, do you want to also include art descendants? So what this does, and if I click the little light bulb here. Here's how this comes in. My children includes any children subsequently born to or legally adopted by me and includes any children subsequently born of assisted reproduction arrangements that I have entered into during my lifetime, whether such children are conceived before or after my death, so long as they are born earlier than and then you put in a number of months after my death. Again, we're not getting into the legal details here. Then there's a lot of discussion about you know, how many months you should put in and that sort of thing. I know there's some discussion about 45 months, and I raised the question, well, doesn't that kind of put the whole trust in abeyance for 45 months? So we've built in a provision that kind of gives the trustee an out. If there is no art arrangement that can be found within a reasonable amount of time, or if that art arrangement exists but can't really result in a live birth through reasonable certainty, the trustee has the authority to say, let's continue administering the trust as if that's not going to happen. So we have that. So that question was about children. Now, the question about descendants is a little bit different. The term assisted reproduction means any assist, whoops, where are we going? Sorry, up here. My descendants, in addition to my descendants, and references to the descendants of any of my descendants, likewise includes children born of art arrangements that any of my descendants have entered into and that resulted in the birth of a child. So, in other words, if you've got a child who then had art children, that would be included in the definition of my descendants. So we just make sure that that's clear. We then likewise, in the general provisions, have added an option for the definition of descendants to include art descendants. And we've enhanced the definition of descendants to include other things as well. So you'll see that in the documents if you take a look at the definition of descendants. All right, so that's one part of it. Like I said, we're not really going to get into the documents today. You'll notice that this is, you know, John Doe who's contemplating marriage. If we take a look at the spousal distribution options, you essentially have all the same options that you had before. Marital deduction, planning, are you going to do the elective share outright? How about the forced spousal SNT? And then we continue on to marital, non-marital division, and we've got a new option that we added here where you can do a percentage or fraction to the marital share. So you can say just a certain amount is going to the marital share. Now, if you select that option, like statutory minimum, we now put in a the ability to be able to do that so that you just get a certain amount going over the marital share and not some calculated amount other than by the percentage or fraction. You'll notice this alert that came up here. Contemplating marriage, marital deduction planning, and disclaimers. This is something else that you will want to take a look at and just kind of read through because it has to do with doing marital deduction planning for It has nothing to do with the gender or the sex of the couple. It has to do with contemplating marriage and making the provisions conditional. And one thing I do want to point out is there's a couple of cases where if you've got this statutory minimum to the marital share, the idea there is that, you know, the thinking is if you're okay with a statutory minimum going to the marital share, well, what if you're not married? Why are you giving the statutory minimum? Well, it might be because I know I've got to do that anyway. I want everything else to go to the residuary. I'm not sure why. But we make the assumption that if you're not married, everything will go to the non-marital share. Same thing with the fractional formula. Because in the fractional formula, essentially what you're doing there is say give as much as I can to the non-marital share for credit shelter purposes, and then to avoid an estate tax in my estate, give the excess that would otherwise cause an estate tax to the marital share. Well, if you're not married, then since the plan would have funded the non-marital share as much as it could, we continue that idea of funding the non-marital share as much as you can, and now we can fund it with the whole thing. It makes no difference. So everything goes to the non-marital share. So you do want to be careful about selecting the non-marital share options. If you're doing fractional formula, thinking that the spouse is going to get something, and you have the non-marital share going to the residuary, well, if they're not married, the spouse or the life partner isn't going to get anything because everything will go to the non-marital share. So again, don't enter into the contemplating marriage planning lightly. Make sure you know exactly what you're doing and dealing with that. And then there's also some discussion about disclaimer planning, and that's an issue for qualified disclaimers by non-spouses. Normally in our marital deduction planning and when you're doing the marital non-marital division, a spouse can disclaim and still be a beneficiary of the disclaimed property. So if it goes over to the non-marital share, the non-marital share, which then goes to a bypass trust or credit shelter trust, the spouse can be a beneficiary of the credit shelter trust. Well, if they're not married at the time, the life partner who is disclaiming cannot be a beneficiary of the disclaimed portion under that bypass or credit shelter trust. So a lot of little issues to look at. Hopefully we've given you just a good kind of general overview of what we've done in the interview. There's a lot of little notes that we've added, you know, this alert about contemplating marriage, other things in the children information that we've added, the general provisions, no definition of descendants, lots of changes in the documents. So if you are one that has done a lot of customizing, you're going to have some work to do when you apply the update to make sure that your documents are going to work properly. And Linda, do we have any questions?
You know, I don't see any questions coming through, but I do want to encourage everybody. I know we're a couple minutes over, but please type in those questions, and we will get to them as we can here. And on a note for that customizing your template, we did have a member benefit webinar not too long ago that's on the 24/7 library and the knowledge base that can address what you'll need to do to those customized templates after you apply the update. So that'll be something you might want to watch.
Okay. Well, let's see. What else can I think of to talk about here while we're waiting to see if there's any questions? I know we are just a couple minutes over, but we want to give people time to ask their questions.
Brian, is there a questionnaire for the client?
Not specifically that goes along with the same-sex planning, no.
Okay, thank you.
No. Sure. You know, one thing I think I'll just point out again, just to make it clear, is that we will refer to this as the same-sex planning update to Elder Docs, but it's also the contemplation of marriage planning, which, again, does not limit itself to same-sex partners. In fact, you'll notice that when we go into this and you're in the interview here, we don't really talk about same-sex partners. We're talking about contemplation of marriage. It really doesn't matter what the partner's gender is when we are contemplating marriage. We're really more interested in the issues related to marital deduction planning and what do we do if you're not married versus if you are married. Becomes a pretty complex document or set of documents because you've got the trust and the companion will, which if you've been around Elder Docs for a while, you know are tightly coupled documents and essentially mirror each other. And we've got to make sure we plan for being married versus not married.
Are there plans to generate a questionnaire for the client?
Well, we have a general elder law planning questionnaire, so if there's something specific we need to do for same-sex planning considerations, sure, we'd be happy to add them there and consider that, but we don't have any immediate plans to do something.
Okay, great. Now, I did get one question here, and I'm just going to go ahead and read it verbatim. What about transgender clients? Do folks in transitional phase What about transgender clients? Do folks in transition face special issues if they are married or life partners? And then this person goes on to add, this gets confusing fast. Massachusetts allows same-sex marriage. I guess if someone is female sex then transitions to male, then gets married, is it treated as same-sex marriage?
Yeah, I don't know the answers to those questions. Great questions for the listserv or for the discussion forum, and I'm sure we've got members that practice in this area and can give some great advice on how that would play out in practice. But I don't know the answer to that.
And another question, why does the interview ask for, quote, gender when what we mean is sex?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I probably ought to change that, and I knew someone was going to notice that because I did. So if I go in and I edit John's name record and it asks for gender right here, I'll probably just change that prompt to sex. We have always had used the word gender just because it means the same thing in the context in which we're using it. If you look up Merriam-Webster's online dictionary, the definition of sex and the definition of gender in this context are identical. It just says the state of being male or female. So because gender has really that only that meaning and sex has other meanings, we initially chose the word gender. In fact, we created the same-sex planning as same-gender planning initially. But in any event, when you see this question here, it's not asking about what gender the person identifies with. It's asking about their biological condition. So we will change that to sex just so that we're consistent throughout.
Great. Well, I think that wraps up all of our questions, Brian. I don't see any others coming through.
All right. Terrific. Well, thank you, and I hope everyone has a chance to review this and take a look at it. I'm using the cloud version that you see on the webinar here, so if you have the cloud version, you've got it. If you have a locally installed version, you will see that an update is available when you use the system this morning. Again, if you customize heavily, you'll want to make sure you carve out some time to be able to deal with your customized templates. But if you don't customize, you can install it and start generating some documents and going through the interview and see what's changed.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Brian. This has been a fantastic webinar. And then, everybody, please be sure to submit your surveys when we close this webinar. So thanks again, and enjoy the rest of your day.
No problem. Thank you.